Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. It's the Old Rugged Cross, Treme Brass Band, as we look at Mr. Batiste, who died this day 1 year ago. And I just love Treme Brass Band. And it's just had to go out with him and a little Billy Eckstein, which we'll play again on the way out of here at the top of the hour, because these two men were just great musical geniuses of our time. And speaking of geniuses, here in the studio right now.
Wow.
Well, really.
Man, that's a stretch. That's a stretch. I haven't seen a hair stretch like that since Chris Davis yesterday going to get that Manny Machado thing.
Milton Kent, professor in the School of Global Journalism at Morgan State University, freelance writer and longtime sports columnist and commentator. Good to have you with us, Milton.
Good to be here, Mark.
Ali Danois, sports commentator and commentator on Society, who is also senior editor at Bounce Magazine. Ali, good to have you with us.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at SteinerShow@gmail.com. Before we talk about Mr. Hernandez, let's talk about the Orioles. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, let's just start with the play. And if you haven't seen the play, you got to go to YouTube.
The third base or first base?
Yeah. You either have to watch the 6 o'clock news tonight or go on YouTube. Seriously, I told my wife yesterday, and she's no sports fan at all, but I said...
But she married you anyway.
But she married me anyway, you know, which speaks to her judgment, not mine, but neither here nor there. I said, I haven't seen a play like that since I was a little boy in Brooks Robinson, Rob Lee May in the 70 World Series. That's exactly what it was. And I saw this morning on ESPN, they actually did, you know, and sometimes they can go overboard with stuff, but they actually put, like, the distance... It was 147 feet from where he, you know,
barehanded.
Barehanded, yeah. And that's the beauty of the play. If you watch it, it ticks off his glove. He has to go barehanded and then make that throw. And he's off balance. The throw, Chris Davis, all he had to do, he leaned, you know, he just did the stretch to get the guy out. But the ball goes right into his glove. He doesn't have to move it. Mark, I'm telling you, it's been, I'd say, at least 20 years. Since I've seen a play like an Oriole make a play like that, that's just remarkable.
And Ali Danois, you Facebooked about this as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been watching Manny now ever since they called him up last year, and this guy is utterly mesmerizing. I mean, I watch him, and like I mentioned before, the things he does on the baseball field makes me want to spontaneously and involuntarily break out into the Carlton dance from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I mean, this guy,
wow.
Milton talked about that play yesterday. It defied the laws of athletic physics. The way he backhanded it with his glove, scooped it up with his bare hand, made that throw off balance. And the amazing thing, guys, is he's not even playing his natural position, which is shortstop.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
He's a recent convert to third base. They'll switch him over to shortstop within the next year or two. But his work on the hot corner is magic. And I know he's just turned 21, but I'm already putting him in that discussion with Jeter and Luis Aparicio and Robin Yount, Ozzie Smith, Ernie Banks, Cal Ripken.
Brooks Robinson.
And Honus Wagner, as one of the best shortstops ever. You know, with his stick, he's one of the top 10 hitters in the American League. He's on pace to possibly break the record for most doubles in a season. I mean, he is one of the most mesmerizing talents to come into baseball, and it's a joy to watch him operate.
See, I'm going to disagree with you slightly, Ali. And I agree with you, he's a remarkable talent. I don't move him from third. Unless you've got, and you can get yourself a serviceable shortstop. You know, but I think I'm one of the people who thought that the Orioles should have left Cal Ripken at third the whole time. Instead of moving him to short, I always thought, he won Gold Gloves, but he won Gold Gloves because his range was limited. This kid is doing stuff at third that we haven't seen, and he has an opportunity to basically set the bar to a level where I'm not saying that. That he wouldn't be a great shortstop because obviously that's how he came up. But if he's this good, basically playing this position for a year, and he's adjusted to it, let him stay there. Go get yourself a shortstop.
Right.
But let him stay there. Let him, you know, I mean, his. And the other thing, too, is as he grows older, he'll get heavier. So it'll make more sense.
That happens to us, doesn't it?
Who are you telling? Who are you telling? But, yeah, let him stay at third, and he'll get heavier, and it'll make more sense. For, you know, he'll theoretically, as he grows older and gets heavier, the power, you know, more of the power will come. So those doubles become home runs. So I'd leave him at third. If he's this good right now at third, leave him there. That's just me.
Ali?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, shoot. You know, I put that guy anywhere in a baseball field and leave him there. I bet you, he could probably come out and throw some relief innings. You know, if Johnson wants to keep acting up. So, listen, man, I'm just amazed. You know, I think the beauty of what he does in the field is really reminiscent of seeing a guy like Michael Jordan operate in the open court.
Ali, are you still there?
Uh-oh. I need a comparison guide. I
think we lost Ali. Let's get our guest back. 410-319-8888. Jump in on this conversation. Milton.
Well, let me say real quick, though, while we're waiting for Ali to come back, all this said about what Machado's done and Chris Davis and so forth, and the great year that Chris Davis is having, this team still needs a pitcher. They still need one starting pitcher. And I was talking to some folks at church yesterday about, like, how are they going to do it? How will you do it? Because you got to figure that there's a core. There are five or six guys that you're just not going to trade. I mean, July 31st is what's been called the trading deadline. It's the day where if you want to make a trade with another team, you can do it without having to pass a player through waivers. After that, you have to pass them through waivers, and you could have, like, say, the Yankees or the Red Sox block the trade by putting a claim on a player. So it's easy to do that before the end of the month. And the question I would ask is, well, who's the guy, who are you willing, now, who, you know, if you establish a group of players that you say we can't trade, what would the group that's not in that group, what would they get you back? Will they get you a pitcher who's good enough to stick towards the front of the rotation, who could, you know, over the last six to eight weeks of the season, win you, say, five or six games? That's the thing. I think that's really the big question for this club is because this club, they've hit more home runs than any team in baseball, but they've given up more home runs than any team in baseball.
So, and Ali, before you were so digitally interrupted and disrespected, you're back. Ali, you there? He's got him potted up.
Digging.
Ali, there you are.
I am here.
Okay. You were in the middle of a thought when you were digitally disrespected.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, he's really, really exciting to watch. And the things that Manny does athletically, you don't really see a lot in baseball. You see so much uniformity. And it's just rare to see a talent of this magnitude come up with the way he has, and in such a short period of time, I'm just amazed. And every time I watch him, you know, he just does something else that makes me just want to slap my grandmother.
Wow, that's.
I might not throw a day like that though.
that's how bad he is.
As we say around home, that's serious. That's serious.
410-319-8888. So if your thoughts, and I know that when my daughter Chelsea, my law school daughter, took me to the game for my birthday, great seats, good game.
Sure.
But she and all these other people are just in love with this man.
Yeah. Yeah. He has potential. He has potential to own this city in a way that, you know, and it's funny. I mean, who's the last baseball player who owned Baltimore after Cal? Who, you know, really owned the city? Nobody. I mean, Adam Jones could be that. Now, Adam Jones is an interesting guy.
Who actually won the game for us.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Who actually won the game for us.
Right, right. And Adam Jones sort of has that potential because in the sense that he could get, which, you know, he could get sort of the guy who really doesn't talk a lot of baseball and the guy who sort of left baseball, you know, sort of the African-American, you know, the African-American. Adam can get that guy talking, but Manny Machado, I mean, I've people who don't, you know, who don't even know baseball, even like baseball, and they look at him and go, oh, and he's, and I get, you know, women, they go like, yeah, and he's cute too, and I go, well, look, I can't speak to that, but the kid can play, so we'll see. I mean, Jones and Machado have the chance to sort of take this, put the city on their back, and sort of grab the Summers away from the Ravens. That's what we ought to hope for. That we don't spend. I mean, God bless the Ravens, but I don't want to spend the whole year talking about the Ravens.
No, I don't either. Besides, I think you're not going to be talking about the Ravens as much as you did last year, coming season, anyhow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We'll get to that another day.
Yeah, another day.
But I think that's going to be the case. Another 10 years.
Yeah.
They'll have to cart me down the hall in a wheelchair by the time they get back to where they are listening. Anyway, so let me talk about something we were talking about last week we didn't get to. And folks, join us here with this 410-319-8888. Aaron Hernandez and all that's been made of this case. Whenever a sports figure faces this, we see this becomes a major news story. People some question, why should it be a major news story? But Milton?
It's a major news story because we spend so much time because if you want to boil it down to its essence, the National Football League is a $9 billion a year industry. We don't ignore $9 billion a year industries. We just don't. And we say that it's interesting. I mean, the dichotomy seems to be, on the one hand, there are people who say that Aaron Hernandez is sort of an outlier. But then you have people saying the other side that this has become stock and trade of the National Football League, that and not just the NFL, but also college football or college athletics in general, that we're seeing, I don't want to go so far as thug culture, but we're seeing a group of young men who are coming into college and professional football with, with records, with prison records already, or accumulating them as they come into the league, and there's something that that the league has to address.
But now, Ali, let me throw this out. The one of the things that you saw some people, really kind of going at the NFL, some people writing like, bring fatherless people coming into play, the quote unquote jungle ethos, which is kind of racialized term to start with, and more they throw out here. Stigmas like snake and dagger tattoos and the rest. But the reality is that Alex Hernandez grew up in the Connecticut suburbs.
Yes, he did.
With an intact family.
Yeah.
Not from the inner city.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear these fools like Geraldo Rivera, Rush Limbaugh, and Jason Whitlock, the sports columnist. Talking about, like you mentioned, this jungle ethos, throwing around terms like, products of the inner city.
Right.
What that basically means is, they're poor, they're not white, and therefore they're brutal human beings of extreme moral turpitude. And when you actually look at it and the rates of criminality in the National Football League juxtaposed with that of normal society, we see that, the NFL players commit crimes at a much lower rate than their peers in the general population. Milton touches on the fact that it is a $9 billion a year industry, and, they are embedded within our sporting culture, and, ESPN's endless loop of highlights and the exaltation of these sporting figures. But, football players commit crimes, doctors commit crimes, lawyers commit crimes, and you look at Harold Shipman, the guy over in England who was a British physician who was a serial killer who murdered over 250 people. You had the lawyer who recently shot and killed Eddie Curry's significant other and their child because the lawyer was involved in some type of relationship with the woman. And, so you have each profession, has its outliers. And, it's just really unfair to target the NFL because if you look at the NFL, I can bring up guys like Myron Roll and Tim Tebow and Charlie Ward and Warwick Dunn. So it just amazes me that people want to place the blame on Ice Cube, Jay-Z, Tony Montana, Tony Soprano, The Wire, the Kardashians. Gangs have been around forever. Our cultural fascination with crime and gangsters have been around forever. And to me, it goes beyond being intellectually lazy. To me, it's just stupidity to even get into this you know, criminal gang
right.
Culture of what the NFL is, when in reality, it's really not.
Yeah, I understand, and I agree with you on some level, Ali, but here's the problem. And I understand exactly what you're saying about doctors and lawyers. The problem is we don't televise, we don't spend 9 hours on Sunday, you know, showing the National Doctors League or the National Lawyers League. This is a public relations mess. This is a, you know, and if we talk about nothing else, you know, during this segment, we have to recognize that sports in this cult, in this society is as much about image as it is as anything else. And the two things that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, has on his hands, growing problems that are going to be on his hands for the foreseeable future, are, one, the idea that a kid, you know, the head trauma issue, they're going to have to deal with that. The idea that football has become, you know, blood sport on that end. But he also has to deal with the issue that there are people, and say whatever you want, the numbers, you're right, in sheer terms of numbers, the numbers of football players committing crimes is probably lower than it is than in the larger population. But that doesn't matter when it comes to image.
Well, one of the things that struck me, they only have like 2 minutes left here. I apologize. I wanted to get to this earlier. It was my fault. But, you know, when you look at the Urban Meyer, the coach of the University of Florida, 31 arrests were made of members of his team from 2005 to 2010. And the times they've been just beginning to look at that aspect of this particular issue.
Had 122 players on a roster one particular year, and 41 of them have been arrested either while they were there or since. That's a third of the roster. And, you know, you can say, again, the numbers can say whatever they want, but that's image. You just can't. If you're an athletic director or general manager or the head of a league, you can't have that. You can't have people believing that the folks who are playing these games, the games that we want to watch, are not good citizens. And everybody understands it can't be choir boys.
And Ali, we have about a minute or less left. Go ahead.
Yeah,
final thought.
You know, the reality of that is we live in a violent society. We look at Columbine. We look at Sandy Hook. You know, we look at all of these incidents that just shock us and hurt us. And, you know, this is part of the American culture. This is not unique to football or basketball or college sports. We could probably take the arrest rate of students at the University of Florida or the University of Maryland and juxtapose that with the athletes and probably come up with some figures that dwarf what we're seeing in terms of isolated incidents.
Well, Ali, I always appreciate you being with us, and we're going to come back to this. Maybe we'll come back. Get you back sooner than later in the course of the week to get into this. I think it's an important topic our listeners really want to get into. Ali Danois, senior editor of Bounce Magazine, sports commentator here on WEAA, especially on the Baltimore Blend in the Morning. Milton Kent's with us, professor in the School of Global Journalism at Morgan State University, freelance writer and sports columnist and commentator. Thank you both for being with us.
My pleasure, Mark.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production. Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Community Housing and Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We're going to go out here with a little bit of Billy Eckstine, Lonesome Lover Blues, as we go out here on this Monday. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Unnery, and Stephanie Maronis. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Lila Warshaw, Albert Phillips Jr., Daniel Dupree, Alexander Rudy, Sinead Hawkins, and Kamani Seldon. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Please go to steinershow.org to click on to our guests and their work and what they're doing and read what they're saying. Also, you can hear today's show there, and you can listen to and download our podcast as well on iTunes. So for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, stay tuned now. Michelle Martin's on her way. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.